Recently, while traveling, perhaps right after scrutiny by the TSA, I got to thinking about what fun travel can be and decided we should probably do a show on the joy of travel. Now, I'll put quote marks around those words joy and fun because while travel can be fun, sometimes there are some challenges that make it less enjoyable. On this week's Eastern Standard, the joy of travel. We're interested in your questions, your comments. How about your personal stories about travel and how you've done so successfully or not so successfully? Send us an email right now, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. In just a few moments, we'll open the phone lines as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, discussing the joy of travel right after the news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. I'm John Hingsbergen. With Memorial Day and the summer months fast approaching, we invite our listeners to chat with us about the topic of travel. As I mentioned in the billboard, we call it, that little announcement before the news, I was traveling recently and having gone through TSA and noticing that travel is not always the fun that it once was. You never quite know what's going to happen. You never quite know when you're going to get screened by the TSA. And it seems like many people are not in a very positive and happy mood while traveling anymore. And of course, with the latest news stories, such as the issue that occurred to a person traveling on United Airlines, and the cost of air travel and changes constantly in the travel industry, I thought this would be a perfect time for us to talk about the joy, and we'll call it the so-called joy or the tongue-in-cheek joy of travel. With me in the studio today is Kristen Branscombe, and Kristen is commissioner of the Kentucky Tourism for the Commonwealth of Kentucky, a graduate of the University of Kentucky, and former commissioner of agriculture. Kristen, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thanks for having me.
We also have on the phone line David and Kay Scott. And David are and Kay are a travel writing duo, married couple, currently writing for CNHI News Service, which means that their column, I assume, appears in the Richmond Register regularly. David and Kay, thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yes.
And we have on the line Charlie Leoka. Charlie is chairman, actually president, I'm sorry, let me get that right, president and founder of Travelers United. He joins us by Skype from Virginia. He's a nationally recognized expert on affordable travel. He also has authored books and founded Travelers United in 2009. He regularly testifies before Congress and serves on consumer advisory boards for the Department of Transportation and TSA. Charlie, thank you so much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
And we are going to open up our phone lines to our listeners, invite listeners to send us email, participate by Twitter if you choose. The email address, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, the Twitter at wekuest, or call 800-621-8890. As always, we're interested in questions, comments, or stories about travel. And let me start with Charlie and maybe some basic background information about how you see the world of travel today. 2009, I guess things haven't changed all that much in just 8 years, but it seems like travel becomes more complicated every year, isn't it?
Well, travel is becoming more complicated, especially with the concept of ancillary fees on top of airfares. And hotels are also getting into this game by having resort fees, which they charge on top of their room rates. The other big change which has come about has been the consolidation of the airline industry. We just don't have very much competition between the airlines or among the airlines. And so that's resulting in the consumer not having as much power as they used to have. So these are some of the things which have changed on balance, and they've created a new world that we're facing today.
What do you think, and what is your take? And this is obviously a few-month-old issue now, but the incident with the passenger on United Airlines, apparently United needed to bump someone from the flight, and I guess they choose people at random. And this Dr. Lau, who is a native of or lives in Louisville, was asked to leave the flight. refused to do so. And of course, we all, I think, know what happened after that. We've seen the videos. What do you think about an incident like that and what that means and its significance for travel today?
Well, the incident should never have happened. First of all, United should have had better management, taking care of their crew scheduling better than announcing it at the very last minute. And from CEO all the way down to gate agent, there were problems with what they did. The other thing that they could have done differently is they could have told people that, look, if you get off the flight, we'll give you $1,350 in cash. And that's the amount of money the DOT has in their regulations, which were never really, which wasn't offered to the passengers. The only thing the passengers got were up to $800 in airline scrip. If you had a more generous offer, I think people would have been scrambling to get off the plane, especially since it was only about a four-hour drive from Chicago down to Louisville. So they could have all banded together, gotten a nice big limo, and partied all the way down.
I like that suggestion. That's a great idea. Well, as you can tell, folks, Charlie is, I think, going to be a resource for some of these issues, for some of these questions. So feel free to raise those questions with him during today's program. Let me turn to David and Kay Scott, your travel writers. And I understand you've recently completed a 12-day trip through the Grand Canyon, Lake Powell, Bryce Canyon, and Zion National Parks. Tell us about that trip. Was that a car trip?
No, we flew to Las Vegas, which we just found the cheapest ticket we could find, rented a car in Las Vegas, and went to all the parks and actually didn't have any problems along the way there or the way back. We found, and I think travelers find it, it's difficult to get lodging in national parks now, so to do Bryce, Zion, and the North Rim of the Grand Canyon, we stayed in a small town of Kanab, Utah. But I think the whole issue is people have to be flexible when they travel, and they have to, you know, we seldom have a difficulty. The planes are crowded, the airports are crowded, but that's just life.
And we just expect it and go with the flow. As we say, it's part of the experience.
You guys have been writing about travel since the late 1960s?
We have. So since we got married, we got married in 69, and that summer we went on a trip out to Western Canada, and we pretty much traveled every summer and most Christmases since then.
And turned
we
it in.
We were living in.
I can say you turned it into
a job.
We were
living in Florida then.
Yeah, we were living in Florida and wanted to get out of there in the summertime. So, and we both taught, so it was most convenient for us to travel for 2 or 3 months in the summer, which is what we've done pretty much since we got married.
How widely have you traveled? Have you traveled just the U.S.? Have you done travel in other nations and shared those experiences through your writing?
We've traveled all across Canada to almost all the provinces, and then we've also done Europe. We've done quite a bit of Europe. We've spent summers over there because we love the trains. And so we travel by train when we're in Europe.
I love the trains more than she does.
But I put up with it.
Yeah.
In your column, what are the topics? What are you intending to communicate to readers of the 130 or so newspapers where your column is read?
Is
it consumer advice? Is it tips on how to travel?
Sometimes, but it's mostly about places we've been and things we enjoyed. In the last column was about a glass museum in Wisconsin that we happened upon, and it was. And I'm really not a big fan of glass, but Kay liked it. And then when I went in and saw, I had a great time. And so we try to tell people not about how to travel, but where to travel and things that might be interesting along the way. We're working on a column now about Lake Powell. When we were out there, we took a boat trip to Rainbow Bridge National Monument. The place is just stunning. It's isolated. It's a 50-mile boat trip from Page, but it's something that I think people would really enjoy, and I think most people probably don't even know about it. So that's the kind of thing we we try to tell them about places that we think they would enjoy traveling to.
David and Kay Scott, travel writers for CNHI News with us, as well as Charlie Leoka. And bringing things a little closer to home is Kristen Branscombe, Commissioner of Tourism for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And I know, Kristen, your job in general is to encourage people to travel the Commonwealth. Since we're talking summer vacations and holiday travel and so forth, for instance, holidays like this weekend, I imagine a lot of folks may be staying within 100 miles or so right here in Kentucky. Talk about what the purpose of your office in state government.
So my main purpose is to kind of be the general promoter of our Commonwealth, which is a great job. I mean, I think all Kentuckians were fiercely proud of our state, and I think we like to show it off. So this is a great opportunity to do so. But we want people to come, you know, Kentuckians, get out inside the borders, experience Kentucky, but also our friends across the nation and the world to come see us as well.
Are there issues and things you would like to encourage listeners to think about when they're traveling, even though it's relatively close to home? What are the potential challenges that might impact one's tongue-in-cheek fun?
You know, I think, I mean, just to kind of flip that just a little, the great thing about Kentucky is that we have so much to offer. So I think the biggest problem a person would have traveling through Kentucky would be what to actually do, because there's so much. Kind of, you talked about Memorial Day and the holidays. We kick off a 99 days of summer, goes from Memorial to September to Labor Day. And we have something every day new for somebody to enjoy and go out to Kentucky. So we like to provide that information to you so you don't have to think too much. The great thing about Kentucky in the summer is we've got a lot going on. And like David and Kay were saying, trying to find rooms. It's, you know, we've always got accommodations of various sizes, shapes, and places and price ranges. But I would encourage people to get out ahead of it, you know, and make those plans early. But again, there's always some opportunities to grab up some last-minute deals.
Charlie Leoka, in just about a minute before we take a station break, tell us briefly, what is Travelers United, this organization that you founded in 2009?
Well, we're basically a travelers advocacy group in Washington, D.C., and we're working to try to make travel better for consumers. We've had a lot of successes, and we're a membership organization. If people pay us, they can help us out with a donation of $20 a year. And we're now starting to look at other things such as cybersecurity when you're traveling and so on, and a lot of different areas. We've managed to change a lot of things in travel already, and we're working to make it better here in D.C.
And you then serve as a resource. Let's say people have a complaint or have a concern about something they've experienced with an airline or with a hotel chain or a car rental agency. Can they come to you to get advice and about how to proceed?
Well, we're not really a resource, and we don't really have a troubleshooting group. However, if someone sends us an email, we will definitely get them in touch with the right people, give them the basic information. There's another troubleshooting group run by a friend of mine named Chris Elliott, and that's at elliott.org, and he'll help you out. And then there are some for-profit groups which help you out when you're working vis-a-vis the airlines for compensation.
Okay, we're going to take a short break and come back to Charlie Leoka, David and Kay Scott, and Kristen Branscombe. This is Eastern Standard, the joy of travel, our topic this week as we get ready for the Memorial Day holiday weekend. 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKU EST. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen, and we're talking about the joy of travel and trying to maybe come up with ways to put the joy and the fun back into travel if it's become difficult for you. Actually, we're interested in your questions, your comments, and your personal stories. We always like to encourage listeners to tell your stories, your experiences that will help others, or at least maybe entertain others, that people may find what you have to say interesting. 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. At WEKU EST is our Twitter address. Let me turn back to Charlie Leoka. When we talk about some of the complications of travel, what about the differences between business travel and personal family vacation pleasure travel? Do you have obvious differences in the way travel can play out for people, whether they're on a mission or whether the mission is relaxation?
Well, I think that the biggest difference is that people who are in business travel are normally having their travel paid for by someone else, and price is not the primary factor. So we're starting to see a bifurcation of a class system in travel, where people that have a lot of money and are willing to pay the full freight are being treated with kid gloves, and people who are trying to save money and buying the least expensive airfares are find themselves being squeezed more and more in the back of the airplane. And I'm not sure how we fix all that. I think the competition might fix a lot of it, but it's a real problem right now as we put more people into the same space on an aircraft. We're starting to have problems of air rage. We're starting to have flight attendants who are overworked because they just have more people to deal with. We don't have room to put overhead luggage in place and so on. And everything, one system compounds the problems in other systems. And so one of the things we're working on in D.C. right now is we're trying to put together a traveler's bill of rights, which allows you to have a little bit more humane treatment when you get on a plane, instead of sort of being faced with the category of self-loading cargo.
Well, I'd like to talk more about that Traveler's Bill of Rights during our program, so we'll come back to that, Charlie Leoka. Turning back to David and Kay Scott, have you ever run into complications in your travels over 40-plus years, obviously? You guys have been traveling and writing about travel for readers of about 130 newspapers. What is the most bizarre thing or the most complicating thing that's ever happened to you all when you travel together?
Well, we live in the very southern part of Georgia, Valdosta, and so all of our flights have to go through Atlanta because that's the only place our little plane out of here goes is Atlanta. And frequently, once in a while, if the weather's bad, our little plane, which holds about 50 people, will not fly. And we only have 3 flights a day, so we have been stuck in Atlanta like at 9 o'clock at night when our plane's supposed to take off. It doesn't. There we are. So we have to spend the night in Atlanta. But in general, when little things pop up, we just kind of figure it, we go with the flow and try to get out of it or around it as best we can. We travel very light. We carry very little baggage with us. I know on long trips, we've gone on 3-month trips where at the end of the 3 months I throw my clothes away because they've been rinsed out and washed so much. But it makes traveling so much easier when you're traveling with very little baggage.
You talk about the baggage.
We haven't had a tragic.
That doesn't sound like
it. We haven't had a tragic experience.
Wow, it sounds like you've experienced inconveniences that others have experienced. You talk about lost luggage. I know a lot of people seem to be worried about their luggage, and it seems like the last thing some travelers want to do is check that bag in the bag check so that it goes into the baggage compartment. I know one of the innovations nowadays, if you carry on, you roll it on up to the gate, and if that carry on is not going to fit, they'll at least take it off to the side and put a pink tag on it or whatever and bring it back to you when you land. How much of an issue, and we'll toss that out to any of you on the program here today, how much of an issue is lost luggage these days, and any advice you may have for people about how to make sure that what you need is going to be with you when you get to the end of the your destination?
We travel a lot, and a lost luggage I don't believe is much of a problem anymore. I think the airlines have done a good job of improving the way they handle luggage. I mean, luggage still gets beat up.
But it gets scanned.
But
it
gets scanned, and they know where it is, and they can find it. And we haven't missed a bag for years, really, and we travel a lot.
And check our bags.
And one of the other things we have to look at in terms of lost luggage, though, is those of us who haven't suffered lost luggage, and I happen to be someone who has, if you don't have your bag when you get somewhere, it's really a pain in the neck. And one of the things that we've done at Travelers United is we did get compensation for lost luggage raised up to $3,500.
Wow.
Wow. And so in the old days, they used to get around $800 and then they'd say goodbye. And so the rules really protected the airlines more than they protected the passenger. And so in the back 2 years ago, or I guess 2012, so it's about that's 5 years ago. Wow. We got the rules changed. So it went up to lost, damaged, or delayed luggage. All get up to $3,500 in compensation. So if you're traveling around the United States, this is a domestic rule, and your baggage is delayed and you need something out of your baggage to use, you've got a pool of money that you can dip into. Mm-hmm. And the airlines have to treat that with respect. And they are going to, if you have your receipts and so on, they'll have to reimburse you.
I'm not that frequent a traveler. Travel maybe by air maybe 2-3 times a year at most. One of the things I observe is that the carry-on luggage seems to be a gigantic complication in today's air travel. It's like the biggest thing, the thing that takes so much time for people to board the plane and takes time for people to exit the plane is all about the overhead compartments and cramming stuff in there. I mean, is there a way that something could be done to make that less of an issue? Of course, I guess that with the fact that the airlines are charging a fee for checking baggage, that's contributed to that.
They could charge a fee for carrying on baggage.
Right. That's and some airlines are already starting to do that.
Right.
But the biggest thing would be if you go on a Southwest flight, they allow up to 2 check bags. And you can always find room. It's very, very rare that you don't have room for your carry-on bags if you are flying on Southwest. But they're the only airline following that rule, and that's sort of unique. So the big thing is I always try to do exactly what the other guests have said. I try to carry on everything. I really don't want to take and leave it to chance. I had a friend of mine who was traveling with me who insisted on checking her bag on a trip to Spain 2 years ago, and we finally saw the baggage 3 weeks later, the day before she was leaving to fly home.
Oh my God.
And so that meant that along the way, we had to go and buy clothes and different equipment and so on throughout the trip, which changed the trip, but it was still enjoyable, and we did get reimbursed, but it's a giant pain in the neck.
That happens despite the fact that the bags are scanned with barcodes and that the airline supposedly knows where your bag is. And, I mean, you know, some of the airlines will send you a text, a message on an app on your phone telling you where your bag is at any given moment.
Yeah, we got lots of those, but it never showed up where we were.
Wow. Kristen has a comment.
Oh, I was just saying, I'm like the other guest. I really do enjoy doing the carry-on, so I don't have to worry about the checked bag. But what I've noticed here over the last couple of months is that there is a great propensity for everybody to do the carry-on bag, like you were saying, trying to get it on. But if you are in zone 2 or 3 with a carrier, you're pretty much not going to get that luggage on that plane in that overhead compartment because, you know, they do their premier classes, their first class, and by the time they get to 2 and 3, you're out of luck. And now I'm starting to see an increasing number of people having to check their bag through. So not even at the curbside service, but checking it all the way through to the destination. So, you know, even though you think you might get a carry-on, it's still going to be problematic, is kind of what I've been seeing.
We're talking about the joys of travel. Of course, we're approaching Memorial Day and the summer travel season. We're interested in hearing from you at 800-621-8890. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. Let's go ahead and talk to Carol from Prestonsburg. Let me say it correctly. Are you there, Carol?
Yes, I am. I'm actually from Lexington, but I'm visiting Prestonsburg today.
Excellent.
I have an observation. I love to travel. I am a senior citizen, and I love driving. I love driving by myself. I've taken a trip to Seattle for the last 5 years, every spring or summer. Plan ahead. I make sure I always have reservations. I don't leave that to chance. I'm very careful. I don't drive after dark. But I did a March trip this year, and that was on my bucket list. to travel across the upper Midwest in the middle of winter. Well, it was 69 degrees in eastern Montana. So I'm going to have to plan that trip again.
To get that real winter experience you were hoping for.
Right. I was shedding layers of clothing. Well, not that far. But I didn't use gloves and I didn't use winter boots. But it was really another great travel experience.
And as far as travel, if you travel by car, like these cross-country drives.
I travel by car any chance I can get.
How do you prepare? How do you make sure your car is safe? How do you know that you're going to be okay? I always worry that, of course, I never have, cars that are terribly reliable.
We keep the car maintained, and I have a loyal, wonderful husband who makes sure I have washer fluid that's to minus 30 if I should be traveling in the winter. We have grandchildren Wisconsin. I make sure I usually have even a shovel in the back, but definitely scrapers for the car and heavy clothing and at least a supply of food just in case something should happen. And knock on wood, it never has. When it has become threatening, I will stop early.
I wonder if any of our guests have any opinions about the roadside assistance services. What's the best way to make sure you have roadside assistance? The travel clubs, for instance, AAA is the one that's, I guess, most widely known. Any opinions on the best way to be safe and be sure that you're going to get help if you have trouble on the road?
I do have AAA. And my car has it also.
Good.
Right. We've belonged to AAA for a long time, and we've never had to call roadside service, but
thank
it
goodness.
Surely gives you a little peace of mind while you're on the road.
Right.
And actually, the maps are worth a lot, and we get a series of maps before we take a trip, and they're good, and the people are nice and knowledgeable. And so I suppose we belong to AAA for almost 30 years.
Wow. What's a map?
Well, that was going to be my question, wondering how much longer they're going to continue to hand out maps at AAA.
I love those maps. GPS is okay, but I like to see the whole picture. I love those maps.
I think the way to travel is with a map. With a map, you can tell what's around you. With the GPS, a lot of kids, I don't think, can read a map anymore, and I agree with you. Maybe they will go by the wayside, but I even love to look at maps when I'm at home. it's kind of nutty.
Any opinions, any divergent of opinion about roadside assistance and auto clubs and so forth? Is AAA pretty much the way to go?
Well, I think that there's a lot of, once again, AAA is the gold standard right now. They're the best known. But almost every insurance company has their own program. State Farm has a program for ex-military people. USAA has a great program. And so I think that you can look around and find someone that will help you out for roadside assistance. And I haven't gotten any reports about anyone being particularly bad. Hmm. So they all deal with about the same people. Even the discount programs are similar. So you can't go wrong, but I do think that you should have it. And I've been in the situations where I've had to use roadside assistance, and I've been with friends of mine who are broken down and they don't have roadside assistance. And the programs that I've used in the past have allowed us to call for roadside assistance, even if it's not our own car.
Right. Carol, thank you for your call. We have a line open at 800-621-8890. If you would like to get on board, send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, or send a tweet at wekuest. We're talking about the joys of travel. Let me turn back to Kristen Branscombe, Commissioner of Tourism for the Commonwealth of Kentucky, back to that issue of maps. Does your office get involved in that kind of thing as part of its promotion of travel in the Commonwealth and making those kinds of materials available?
We do. We work with the Department of Transportation, and we work with them on the layout and the look of the map, but they are the ones that produce it. One thing that we're seeing is that our international visitors, they love maps. They feel more comfortable having a map. They may look at the GPS and whatever handheld device, but the maps are kind of their reinforcement. They feel better with that. We're kind of also starting to see a millennial switch and wanting to go to a map because it's vintage and cool.
Hmm.
So I hope that trend continues and they really embrace the map. And, you know, there's so much, I think, like David and Kay were saying, that you can see on a map that, you know, the GPS doesn't tell you about. And sometimes I think we have a problem of looking down, looking at a screen and not looking at what's around us. And that's with all of travel, not really embracing what's in front of us, but really looking at the screen to tell us about the travel experience.
Let's go back to the phone and Turner from Georgetown, Kentucky. Turner, thank you for calling. You are on the air.
Hello.
Hello, Turner. Go ahead.
Yes. Just two comments. If and I live in Georgetown, near Georgetown, central Kentucky area. If I'm going to Chicago, Indianapolis, Atlanta, I'm going to drive. It's faster because you have a 45-minute early check-in, and then who knows how long you're going to have to wait for your luggage on the other end and then find a taxi or transportation to your destination. So it's faster to drive, and I can carry what I want to. The other comment is on GPS. This is a recent trip to Washington, Georgia, which is near Atlanta. I'm following my dashboard GPS, and it cost me about an hour's time, and I'm going back to maps. But one interesting thing that happened was it said, in this very pleasant voice, within 300 feet, make a legal U-turn. And I did that, and as soon as I got the U-turn completed, it said, within 300 feet, make a legal U-turn. So it has me going in circles.
I think we've all been there.
Wow. We certainly have.
Turner,
that's all I got.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate hearing of your experiences. We're talking about travel as we approach Memorial Day holiday weekend and as we get into the summer season. And we're glad to have those stories from our listeners. We're glad to, if you have any questions, any suggestions that you'd like to get from our guests, any tips. I'm thinking in terms of how to get the best deals on car rentals and on airfare and on hotels and maybe trips and tour packages and so forth. And we're going to take a short break. I'm going to ask our guests to think about that. If you have some suggestions you can offer to our listeners about how to get those best deals. And, you know, we see tons and tons of advertising trying to encourage us to use various online services to make reservations and save money. But what is the best way to go about that? WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com, at WEKU EST, the Twitter address and the phone number, 800-621-8890. Get on board with your question, your comment, or your personal story. We'll get to the former state legislator, Rita. She's on the line, and we'll talk to Rita Smart in just a few moments. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, The Joys of Travel, the topic of our program this week with Charlie Leoka, president and founder of Travelers United, joining us by Skype. Kristen Branscombe, commissioner of tourism for the Commonwealth of Kentucky, is with us in the studio. And David and Kay Scott are on the phone with us. They are a married couple, and they write for CNHI News, a travel column in the papers, including the Richmond Register. You're welcome to be part of our program at WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com, at 889, at WEKU EST. That's the correct Twitter account for this program, and 800-621-8890. And let me turn back to our guest before we talk to former Representative Rita Smart, who's on the line. Your suggestions, I tossed out there your ideas for getting the best deals, the best pricing overall. Let me start with Kristen. I know, again, dealing with the Commonwealth of Kentucky, is there within our own state, is there some way you know of to make sure you're getting the best pricing?
I just think to start it off, you know, the research shows that a traveler looks at 130 different resources before they make a travel decision. And so that could be a state website, their friends, social media. So 130 different places before they make a decision. And I think that's kind of indicative of finding the best deals. Also, a lot of hotels, attractions, as the event gets closer or the week gets closer, the day gets closer, they start decreasing the price on their inventory, trying to move it, trying to get it sold. So if you do like to play it a little fast and loose, waiting a little closer to your travel time would be a great way to do it. But I think that state parks in Kentucky, they are doing a lot of deals, a lot of things that are great for family travel or group travel, and just following along, signing up for their newsletters. And I know we get tired of newsletters and things cluttering our inbox, but those loyalty programs or newsletters and being part of a club, that's a really fantastic way to find those deals.
I'm going to bet that there won't be any rooms or cabins available this weekend right now, though. If someone is inspired by this show, that I think I'll go to one of the Kentucky state parks and rent one of those lovely cabins and enjoy the lovely surroundings. Probably filled up, would you say that?
I would say that most are, but, you know, I think there's still people, you know, people cancel every day because of, you know, different circumstances. So I think there's always an opportunity to check.
Okay. All right. I'm glad to hear that there's hope for those who are last-minute deciders. David and Kay Scott, your suggestions for getting the best deal, pricing on airfares, car rentals, hotels, packages for tours, and so forth.
We use the internet as much as possible. We travel a lot in the national parks, and we know that they're not going to change their pricing. A few of the parks are run by companies, concessionaires, that do alter their pricing according to how fully booked they are, but most of them don't. They set their prices at the beginning of the year, and some of them are full all the time, so you just have to plan way, way, way ahead. So it's kind of a game.
Another thing we do is we'll often go to a website like Travelocity or Expedia, and we'll look for the lowest prices, but then we go to the individual websites, and often you can get a price on a discount that's lower than the travel internet providers can get. And especially on rental cars, which is what we did in Las Vegas, we tried to find the lowest price using the travel services, and then we went to the individual sites and actually got a lower price than they offered. So you kind of have to be persistent. You have to do a little homework, and you can often get a better price than it would appear at first.
And Charlie Leoka, what do you think?
Well, basically, I urge everybody to use an online travel agency. Use a Travelocity, use an Expedia, use a Priceline. Those kinds of travel agencies or online agencies really have different prices. And if you check around, you'll be able to get as good a price as you can find almost anywhere else. One of the things it's sort of sorry to see is when people are shopping for airfares. First, they'll use an online travel agent or a meta search engine like a Kayak, and then they'll go directly to the airline. And the only thing that we're doing there is that we're cutting our nose off to spite our face as consumers, because the airlines do not want us to comparison shop, and that's what we want to do. And as long as we don't use the comparison shopping systems that we have, we're not going to be able to continue to comparison shop and really let competition work.
So do you feel that those systems ultimately will get you the better deal if you stay with those rather than going directly to the airline?
Oh, if in terms of the airlines, almost every case it will get you as good a deal. And when you're talking rental cars, certain websites, if you go to an Expedia, you don't get the great deals that you go to Travelocity. Or if you go to Orbitz. Orbitz is the one that I found to be the best, and it covers a lot more of the low-end independent rental car companies, and I've never had a problem with any of those in my 40 years of traveling. And then the new thing on the block is Airbnb and HomeAway. If you're traveling with a family, there's nothing better than having basically a home or a little condo or an apartment when you're somewhere. It allows you to to have breakfast together, and it gives you a place to put the family all together, and then sleep separately. So these are new developments which are coming online, and I think that in order to save money and in order to look at the evolution of the travel market, those are the directions that I think people should be going into.
All right. Charlie Leoka of Travelers United. Let's go to the phone line and former Representative Rita Smart here in Richmond. Rita operates a bed and breakfast in town, so I guess you're a little bit familiar with travel from that point of view, the tourism coming into Madison County and so forth. Rita, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. A very interesting program, and here at the B&B, we're looking forward for the holiday weekend. We have booked solid.
I'll bet.
In fact, we have a guest this week from Sweden.
Oh, my.
So it's always interesting to see where people are coming from and what they're interested in. I'd like to make a comment about getting the lowest price. Especially in Kentucky, if you're looking to take your family, you're looking at a B&B. I would encourage you to call the B&B individually, because you can always get a better price talking with the innkeeper.
Making that personal connection?
Making that personal connection. The other thing, many of our B&Bs in Kentucky are members of the Kentucky Bed and Breakfast Association. That means we have higher standards. And sometimes when you go through places like Airbnb, who are not inspected, you may be a little bit disappointed. But you can always count on the B&Bs who are members of the Bed and Breakfast Association.
Rita, I understand you just got back from a trip overseas.
I have. I was touring Ireland with a group from the University of Kentucky studying tourism. And I know Kristen works real hard on tourism for Kentucky. And I was amazed in Ireland. It, of course, is a lot like Kentucky, a lot like eastern Kentucky in that a lot of the land is unsuitable for farming. And so in those areas of Ireland, they capitalized on tourism. And I was just amazed at the number of tour buses and people going in and out. And the thing that I picked up most that people are interested in is just telling the story about your own area. We were sort of laughing among ourselves saying, you know, you could almost get people to come and look at anything. And we were looking at rocks in Ireland.
Well, I know they got one that people go kiss all the time.
Sure. But when you think about eastern Kentucky and the beautiful mountains and all, I see maybe tourism as something that could really blossom there. So I do want to give Kristen a shout-out for the good work that they're doing. This year we're celebrating the 225th anniversary of Kentucky and promoting that. And I believe tourism is on the rise in Kentucky, and I'm thankful for that.
Rita, thank you so much for being part of our show today and sharing your experience. We need to move on. But I am going to make the suggestion to Kristen. Sounds like we've got an idea. I think Kentucky needs a Blarney Stone.
Well, you can kiss any side of a mountain, John.
All right. Thank you, Rita Smart, for being part of our show. Let's go back to the phone and talk to Michael from Sadieville. Michael, you are on the air. Go right ahead.
Hey, how's it going today?
Going great. Thanks for calling.
I had a question. I recently bought a sailboat down in Florida, and I love to sail, and I like to take my dog with me. And I don't have any experience flying with the dog on the airplane, and I have two different size dogs. I have a small dog that I could probably take on the plane with me, and then I have a medium-sized lab, you know. So I just wanted to get some advice on how to travel with, you know, your pet, because there's nothing better than just hanging out with the dog for a week, you know.
Well, they're a member of the family.
Yeah.
David K., Charlie, Kristen?
We'll defer to Charlie on this.
Right. We don't have an animal.
We don't have an animal and don't have to worry about that.
Okay. Well, the first thing you should do is you can carry on dogs if they're a certain size, and you can send your dog along with you and check baggage. You need to check with the airlines. Some airlines carry animals and some airlines don't. And the other thing that you can do is they do have airlines now which only cater to moving pets around. But normally they're on the high volume routes, like allowing people to take their pet from New York to L.A. and stuff like that. But you definitely can get it done. There are very strict rules and regulations for dealing with pets. I often like to say that if you travel as a dog, you get treated better than you do as a human being because they have rules that require minimum space. However, check with the airline, and you probably will have a choice of two or three airlines. And once you check with those three airlines, you'll have a pretty good idea of the direction you have to go in.
Is there any danger to your pet if they go in to check the baggage?
There's always danger, just like there's danger to your checked bag. You know, sometimes it shows up and sometimes it doesn't. However, those problems are few and far between. We do have a reporting system with the Department of Transportation. If you're really concerned, you can go to the DOT website and they'll have a section on problems with pets. But in general, it's a very, very small issue, of course, unless it's your pet. But but it's something which has been looked at carefully, and the airlines who do carry pets take extra care of the animals.
All right. Thank you, Michael, for your call, for your question. And let's stay with the phone. We're just about out of time, about 5 or 6 minutes. So let's get Ron on from Frankfurt with your suggestion. Thanks for calling, Ron.
Hello. Thank you. I rent cars quite often, and I've used the sites that some of your guests use, Orbitz et al., and I've compared them with the rental car company sites. But I can always beat those prices using some of the local buying warehouses, big box stores. I don't want to mention their names. You must have a membership, but you can save the cost of the membership plus with one rental. The prices are better, and you're given a second driver free, and a second driver on a rental car, if you're not a spouse, can cost $10 a day. So I suggest people look into these big warehouses that we have around the country.
Right. And let me agree with you there. I think that there are ways to save money, but you have to belong to Sam's Club, you belong to Costco. They've got giant travel organizations, and they carry a lot of weight, and they can get you good deals. The only problem there is you have to, A, know that the deal is there, and B, spend the $70 or $50, whatever the membership fee is, per year. The other thing I'd recommend is don't forget travel agents. Just plain old ordinary corner travel agents can be an enormous help when you're traveling. And they've got great deals that they can get you with hotel associations and so on, and where they're members of hotel groups, where they can get you, it might not be a difference in the price, but they might get you a free breakfast. They'll get you early check-in and stuff like that. So check with your travel agency, and for the $25 to $50 that they charge you for setting up a trip, sometimes it's really turns out to make your trip far, far more enjoyable.
All right. Thank you, Ron, for your suggestion. We're just about out of time with this week's Eastern Standard. We have, I guess this is an email message. I don't have a name. Oh, Joey. Joey from Madison County wrote saying that they're very happy that our state makes efforts to promote travel and tourism. The brown roadside signs along the state highways are great for informing folks points of interest that can be found traveling off exits. Bourbon Trail and wineries seem to be the most promoted, adding to the joy of travel in Kentucky. From farms to caves to river cruises to beautiful lakes and state parks, Kentucky, it seems easy for anyone to find an interesting destination within our borders. Thank you, Joey, for that message. Let me just one more question I can toss out to our guests here. Some folks have called in talking about traveling by car, road trips and so forth. Is there a way to compare the cost of traveling? Let's say if you making a trip to, say, Chicago or Washington, D.C. or Atlanta from central Kentucky versus airfare, how do you judge that, whether it's going to be more efficient and more economically viable for you to drive versus flying?
Well, it's really not difficult. I mean, you figure what it's going to cost you to park if you or take transportation to the airport, what the fee is, and figure the cost of driving. One thing I want to mention, I know you're almost out of time, but one of our great stops, we write a book on national park lodges, is Mammoth Cave National Park. We've been there many times. About every 3 years when we revise a book, we stay at Mammoth Cave Hotel. And it's a restful, beautiful national park that we really love. So I thought I'd tell you that before you sign off.
We're glad,
to have, out of Kentucky.
Glad to have that endorsement, and Kristen's glad to hear that, certainly.
Yeah, and I'll chime in to say I love your painted flood walls. I was just up in Maysville, Kentucky, not exactly on the normal tourist routes, but they've got an amazing series of flood walls up against the river up there, and I just find they tell a great story, and it's a great part of history.
Charlie Leoka, I understand you, I'm sure you have a website people can come to if they want to know more about Travelers United.
Right. Visit us at travelersunited.org.
All right.
And we'll be, we're expanding offerings the end of June or beginning of July, and we'd love to have you aboard.
Okay. Thank you, Charlie. David and Kay, do you post your stories and your columns online, or shall we just look to our local CNHI newspaper for your work?
You'll have to get a newspaper. Almost all of them carry it online, our weekly column online, and then the dailies often carry it in the Sunday or weekend paper.
Okay, and we come back to Kristen Branscombe of Kentucky Tourism and where people can come for information from your office and your department.
KentuckyTourism.com is the best place to find us, but we're on all of our social media channels, so if you need a little inspiration, we can certainly do that there. And we just invite all Kentuckians, challenge all Kentuckians to travel the state this year and make it a point to see how many counties you can go to.
All right, Kristen Branscombe, Commissioner of Kentucky Tourism, David and Kay Scott, travel writers for CNHI News, and Charlie Leoka, President and Founder of Travelers United. Thank you for being part of this week's Eastern Standard. Thanks to our producers who assist in putting the show together each week, Devonna Gaines, Zach Redding, Julia Dake, and Marissa Hempel. Our technical director is Brian Bartlett, and we want to remind you that we're glad to hear from you at any time. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, or send a tweet at wekuest. This program will be available as a podcast online for listening or downloading as of sometime this afternoon, on Thursday afternoon, and it repeats on Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. I'm John Hingsbergen. Thanks for joining us for Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations.